Good morning. I'm Gary Gramling, Chairman of the San Diego Housing Commission, and I'm calling to order the regularly scheduled meeting of the Housing Commission Board for October. Today is October 7th, and the meeting is called to order at 9:04 a.m. A couple of housekeeping announcements as usual. Members of the public who wish to address the Housing Commission must complete a speaker request form. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes each. Collective testimony by those who support or oppose an item shall be limited to no more than 15 minutes total per side. Non-agenda public comments are heard at the beginning of each meeting. Those who wish to address the board about a topic that is not on the agenda must fill out a white speaker request form, something like this, and race up and get it over here to Angie as quickly as you can. Because we're going to call those right after I quit talking. Members of the public also may request to have an item pulled from the consent agenda by submitting a speaker request form prior to the start of the meeting. That makes no sense because I don't even announce what I propose as the consent agenda until after we've done this. So if after you hear the proposed consent agenda, if you wish to have that pulled so that it can have a full hearing, please indicate and begin to make a move toward the front speaker podium and indicate it as such. To speak on a matter on the agenda, members of the public must complete a speaker request form and submit it to the recording secretary before the item is called. Those who wish to speak in opposition to the item must complete the pink-colored form, and those in favor of the item must complete the gold-colored form. There is no political insinuation by our choice of colors as to those forms. I forgot to announce before I started reading that we do have a quorum present. Five of our seven members are present. Two have an excused absence on that, so we do have a quorum. Next, we'll call the non-agenda public comment. We have one speaker request form. You wrote your last name so that I wasn't sure of it, but I believe it's Nathan Schmidt. And it looks like Michael McSweeney will be speaking with you. Gentlemen, please come forward. When you get to the podium, push the button so that the red mic light comes on. And first give your names and any affiliation, and then continue.
Good morning. Charles Schmidt of Chelsea Investment Corporation.
Nathan Schmidt from the Southern California Housing Collaborative. I think we were going to watch video first.
Imagine for a moment you're a parent or a family member of a person with a developmental disability. Your single biggest fear is, where will my child, brother, or sister live when I'm gone? Independence Point is the first affordable housing project built in San Diego with units set aside for a person or a family member with a developmental disability. Persons with a developmental disability often live at home into adulthood, then typically with a family member until they die. This project changes that paradigm forever. Originally designed as a market-rate townhome for-sale project, Independence Point was acquired by Chelsea Investment Corporation with the intention of making this the first affordable housing project devoted to serving this almost invisible special needs population. Four of the townhomes were redesigned into a community center with offices, a community room, laundry facilities, and three accessible flats for persons who also have mobility challenges, all served by a large elevator. These three-bedroom units with attached garages are bright and spacious, offering the new residents the feeling of home they lacked before. And while this is a first for this population, Independence Point is also a catalyst for the Lincoln Park neighborhood in San Diego's 4th District. The transformation from a vacant, debris-strewn lot into 33 quality, secure townhomes is quite dramatic. Let's listen to what San Diego leaders have to say about Independence Point.
What makes Independence Point unique and special to us is the population base that gets served here. It's a special needs population who benefit by being in a congregate setting, who benefit from being able to extract strength off each other, And I think that's important to the Housing Commission as we try to serve the needs of the community. As many people know, I'm handicapped myself. I understand what it's like to have a special need and to be able to be mainstreamed into the larger society. Sometimes it needs a little, takes a little help. So that's what we try to do here.
There are 20,000, 22,000 families between San Diego and Imperial counties alone that have a family member who's developmentally disabled. So we, and I saw it at the family level and the impact that Avery has on her family, and then I learned about the numbers at the macro level by getting acquainted with our wonderful San Diego Regional Center.
I've been in this business for 40 years, and a project like this is something that I would didn't think I'd ever see happen. This is incredible. The number one thing that people want, people with developmental disabilities, is an affordable, nice place to live, and this is way beyond our expectations. It's incredible.
It's a beautiful development. I just toured it, and for the residents here, they're going to love it. They need this. The disability community really needed something like this. I didn't want them to go elsewhere trying to find a facility that can accommodate their needs. They have it right here, and so it's very important to me as well as the residents of this particular community.
That we used to live in a garage and it was really tiny. We didn't have that much space, and then once we came here, it was really big and it was really fun to have a really good home than we used to have.
Oh, we're very blessed, especially during Christmas time, and it gives me and my two daughters the space that they need. And I noticed an improvement with their education. We used to live in a one-bedroom apartment, very tiny, and now they have their own space. I have a daughter, my youngest, that's 6 years old. She has spectrum autism. The regional center comes over. She gets home therapy. She also gets physical therapy by Children's Hospital that comes out here. And we have the garage for the physical therapy. And also ACEs comes out. That's our home therapy. They were coming out once a week. Now it's twice a week because of the space.
So you know about the project because you were there with us. You're a partner in the deal, but just a couple of quick updates. We've got 29 persons with developmental disabilities living in the 25 set-aside units, 25 with one member, two with two members, and one household with three members, including a parent. So huge impact project. We've done a lot of projects, a lot of units. This one is very, very special to us. On behalf of the Southern California Housing Collaborative, the San Diego Regional Center in Chelsea, we'd like to present you with this award that the project received from the Building Industry Association in special recognition for providing the homes for the developmentally disabled.
That's kind of pretty. A couple of comments. I've often wondered why it's taken so long for this type of a development to get built and in operation here in San Diego. Over the years, we've had a chance just looking at families I've known as my kids were growing up who really needed to be able to find a place that was all about special needs and being able to help them And I've often had thoughts about, well, what does happen when the parents get older and are less able to provide all of the care and all of the services that special needs have. And so this type of a project is really, it's special, and we need more of them. So thank you very much. Okay, and we have a second speaker request form on a non-agenda item. I believe the first name is Gay, so it's Gay Ann Williams. Are you here? Please step forward. And just like with the other persons, when you get up there, there's a button for you to push so that the microphone will hear you. Please identify yourself after you push that button.
My name is Gay Williams, and I am a Section 8 voucher holder, and I have been participating in the program since the latter part of December 2005. Okay, I have a couple things here that I'd like to share with you. I have here on a USB drive some pictures that will help tell a story better. I did discuss this with somebody in advance, and they said that I could bring my USB drive in, and if you would like to look at the pictures. I offered to bring my computer in. I have my computer, and I could... I am trying to, I will put it in there. In fact, I brought my timer to watch myself for 3 minutes. But it. Okay. Well, while I'm talking, if you want to look at the pictures, okay, it's in the file that it says San Diego Housing Commission meeting. Down my outline so I don't get lost.
And don't be nervous, none of us bite.
Okay. Please excuse me, I've been really sick. I'm beginning to get well, so I'm a little bit gruff here. Now, on behalf of all of us participants at the Affordable Housing and Section 8 vouchers, you know, we thank you for putting a roof over our head. No one is complaining about that. Okay. In 2005, when I got on the program, I had... no difficulties in finding an apartment. The Housing Commission rental list offered a variety of apartments in all neighborhoods in San Diego. They were not just predominantly in City Heights in the 92105 and 92115 area. It's very Hispanic and Muslim and Black, and I am not complaining about that. It's just become very, very difficult to live as a Caucasian woman in this neighborhood. Right now, my apartment is in abatement. It went into abatement on October 1st. I got my move-out packet on September 22nd.
Let me interrupt you for just a second so that those in the audience don't know. If the apartment that she's renting utilizing the Section 8 voucher falls out of the standards that we have to operate within set by HUD, then it goes into what is known as an abatement, and the landlord is supposed to deal with that. Okay.
Okay. The reason it went into abatement is the owner and property manager are not making repairs. For the past 2 years, I have fought up and down with getting repairs made. My apartment was advertised as having a washer, dishwasher, built-in microwave, and a vanity with, you know, a sink. And all those things are broken right now. They've disintegrated. The dishwasher has never worked. The washer. The neighbor was over the other day banging on my door saying, do something about your washer. It's really loud and it's waking me up and disturbing me. And she was really mad. And I asked her to call the landlord. And previous to that, when I moved in, there were no roaches in my apartment. And unfortunately, I had a serious roach attack, and my apartment was sprayed over 5 times. The day after my apartment was sprayed the last time, I was let go from my job permanently because I no longer looked really good, and they didn't feel that I just looked bright and awake, and I didn't speak fluent Spanish. And the district that I've moved in needed Spanish speakers. Then I've had nothing but difficulties with my landlords. They are not calling about repairs. They have not responded. Here is the last conversation that I had with my landlord. The landlord's notes are here. My emails are here. She keeps telling me that they're going to come in and make repairs, and they're not. And the last time I heard from anybody, a handyman came over on Friday night at 8 o'clock at my house banging on the door, and I was sick, and I did not answer the door. That's the only time that he's been up to make repairs. And now I'm supposed to be out of my apartment. I'm ill. I don't have an apartment. I've talked to Del Marine. I've tried to contact Candy Roberts. I've talked to my worker, and I'm not sure what to do. You know, I can get my stuff put in a shelter, but I'm without housing. These pictures here are not even half of what I have. There's still stuff on the balcony. It was urine and feces, and there were people running up and down, and it has been crazy. People using the grassy area as a bathroom, not just animals, but people. Those clothes smell like urine, and it was really making me very sick. Those are the cushions that I have complained about that smell like urine, just something awful. It was just terrible. I don't know if they were stolen bicycles or bicycles.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
The program that we offer on behalf of HUD is intended to help the participants have decent housing.
Yes.
And the photos you show are very, very disturbing. And the story you've told is also disturbing. It is the normal process of the public comment is that we don't respond here to what you've said. But what I would like to do, and Mr. Davis, who oversees the Section 8, he oversees a lot of this operation, but part of it is Section 8. And I would like for Jeff to arrange either for himself or for someone near him in the operation of the Section 8 department to set up a time to spend with you and to delve further into this and see what we can do through the program to help you out here. Those are disturbing photos. So, and Mr. Davis is here, and he'll probably when you walk away from this, someone representing him or himself will probably want to meet you just outside the door and maybe set up sometime. Okay.
Well, thank you for listening, and I didn't come here to embarrass the Housing Commission because I know this is a very good program, and I'm sorry that this happened.
Well, it's not one of the properties that we actually own and manage. If it were, there'd be more than embarrassment happening right now. But but it is a concern, and don't worry about embarrassing us. We'll work with you.
Thank you.
Okay, commissioners, this is the time when commissioners get an opportunity to speak out on any comments of any kind. What if anything, do you have to say this morning? No one's got any comments. And I know Mr. Gentry is going to be next, and he always has a comment or two, so I'm not worried. And sometimes when he comments and I comment, we end up overlapping everything, so I'm not going to do that. I'm going to hand it over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and as you know, I always have comments. About a half a dozen things I'd like to point out to the board, good things that have either happened since the last board meeting or are about to happen. First is, looking right out the window here to my right, is on September the 19th, we conducted the grand reopening celebration of the historic Hotel Churchill. As you can see out the window, that property is wonderful now. And if you've not seen it at night with the old neon light on the top lit up, it is just gorgeous. So it's I'm very proud of what got done with that property. To Debbie Ruane, the head of our real estate section, and to Mike Papko, who is our senior VP of real estate and the head of Housing Development Partners. They and their folks did a wonderful job, and that property is a showpiece. As you all well know, it's currently housing some 72 homeless individuals, including 56 veterans. It's at full occupancy right now, very close to it, and we're very pleased with that. And the celebration itself included the mayor, Representatives Peters and Vargas, County Supervisor Cox, City Council Member Zapp and Gloria, HUD Los Angeles Director Marcy Chavez, Civic San Diego CEO Reese Jarrett, and our Chairman Gary Gramley, who participated in that ceremony. And Frank Gertassen, who was there as well, as well as Commissioner Spoon, I believe, was there as well. So it was, and Commissioner Davis was there too. Thank you for all the memory help here. But it was a nice event. And Keeley. Maybe I should have said who was not there.
Virtually everybody who's at this table.
Maybe I shouldn't have gotten into that deep. But it was a wonderful ceremony. Thank you all for participating in that. Also, another ceremony, different but just as important, I was able to participate in earlier this week on October the 4th. I was able to join San Diego City Council President Pro Tem Marty Emeril at the grand reopening of the Mayberry Townhomes in Southcrest in the southeast part of the city. These are 69 rental townhomes, which will remain affordable for 55 years. And this is a property that was developed by Community Housing Works, one of our major nonprofit partners. And this board authorized the issuance of bonds into this program some time ago. And this was an interesting celebration. This was in the evening over an early dinner. And I wondered why they scheduled it for 6 in the evening. But these are 2- and 3-bedroom townhouses. There were something like 140, 150 kids living in that property. So it was a nice celebration and was not a quiet one. It was a nice one to be at. Let me point out a couple of other things. On September 21st, I was honored to present testimony before the U.S. Senate Subcommittee on what we call the San Diego model of developing locally, publicly governed housing. And my testimony is in the packet in front of you. If you've not read it already, I would encourage you to do so. And we look good because we have, we do the best programs with the best board and the best staff in the country. I have no doubt about that. So it's, I would commend you to that. And also, we have that testimony on our website. And when even your wife says you did a good job, I did a good job at that one. So I would commend it to you. Also, something that was flattering, that was at least partly truthful, the Union Tribune did a personal profile on me this past Monday, October the 3rd, which presented some information about me and my background and how I got to be in this place. And if you're thoroughly bored, that's worth reading as well. One other media item that I would commend to you as well is that on October the 1st, the Union Tribune, which was last Saturday, the Union Tribune printed a correction to a factually inaccurate newspaper article that was published on September the 15th that basically criticized this agency for not collecting monies from developers. Those monies were not due and payable. The reporter did not understand what he was reporting on, and the newspaper did reprint a retraction and a new article on October the 1st. So we've had a good bit of media attention here just lately. And, Mr. Chairman, one other thing going forward, and then I'll relinquish the mic back to you. A week from today, there will be a meeting of a national organization called the National Association of Housing and Redevelopment Officials, NAHRO, or NARO. NARO is made up of over 20,000 practitioners across the country dealing in the public provision of affordable housing, and as both staff people, board members. It's the best training arm for this industry that I've encountered in my career. And that organization presents a number of awards every year. And this year, our chairman, Mr. Grambling, is getting an award as the commissioner of the year, meaning the top housing commissioner in the whole country for 2016. And I just wanted to point that out in closing. Gary.
Honestly, it's really a pleasure to think that I'm going to get that next week. So I could try to be totally modest and say, oh, but I'm proud of it. So there. Yeah. And he says it'd be out of character for me to be too modest anyhow. So at this moment, I'd like to propose the consent agenda, and I move that items 100, 101, 102, 103, 104, and 106 be moved to the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, any discussion? Anyone want to oppose that out there in the audience? No one's racing forward, so I'll call the question. All in favor of the consent agenda as proposed, indicate by saying aye. Opposed? Thank you. That doesn't mean it's necessarily going to be a short meeting, because all of us can be long-winded when we want to be so. So be careful there. So we'll go to item 105. Oops, I forgot. I have to move the minutes. So you've all had a chance to receive the minutes and review them, hopefully. Are there any changes, corrections? Seeing no indication of such, is there a motion to approve? Commissioner Tassin has moved approval. Is there a second? Commissioner Hubbard has moved has seconded that motion. Discussion? All in favor of the minutes, please indicate by saying aye. Opposed? Minutes are approved. All right, now 105. Gentlemen.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. Ted Miyahara, Director of Housing Finance. With me is Cameron Shariati, Real Estate Manager. The item before you is a preliminary bond issuance for 54 units in southeastern San Diego. The project before you is an existing affordable housing development that was originally built in 2002 and financed with 9% tax credits. Under staff recommendation number two, you'll see that staff is requesting an exemption relating to section 4.2 of our bond program policy. The developer is requesting the use of tax credit rents versus San Diego Housing Commission bond policy rents. Rents and income restrictions vary depending on funding source. TCAC and the Housing Commission are slightly different with respect to the permitted household heights, household size used to determine maximum rents. The Housing Commission uses a bedroom count plus one methodology versus TCAC's 1.5 persons per bedroom, which really results in a tax credit program allowing slightly higher rents for 3 and 4 bedroom units. 80% of this project consists of 2 and 3 bedroom units, which compounds the issue. If the Housing Commission rents are utilized, the rehab is not feasible and the developer will not pursue the rehab of the project. When a project income is reduced, the amount of the permanent debt that can be leveraged is also reduced. So that's really the crux of the issue here. This is an existing tax credit project with covenants recorded. There is no impact to the tenant rents. Tenant rents will stay exactly the same as they are today. So I'll just go ahead now and turn it over to Cameron for a presentation.
Good morning, Commissioners, Chair Gramling, and Mr. Gentry. Item 105 is a request for a recommendation that the Housing Authority issue a bond inducement resolution for up to $6.25 million in multifamily housing revenue bonds for the development of Casa Puleta Apartments, authorize application submittals to the California Debt Limit Allocation Committee for a bond allocation, approve the selected financing team, and that the Housing Authority authorize the President and CEO of the Housing Commission to execute and perform acts as appropriate to implement upon advice of General Counsel. In addition, staff requests that the City Council hold a Tax Equity and Fiscal Responsibility Act public hearing and adopt a resolution approving the issuance of multifamily housing revenue bonds. As mentioned, staff also requests an exemption relating to Section 3.2 of the Housing Commission's Multifamily Housing Revenue Bond Program policy to authorize the use of the California Tax Credit Allocation Committee's rent calculation methodology. Casa Puleta is an existing 54-unit multifamily development located at 1145 South 45th Street in the southeastern San Diego community in Council District 8. The development consists of 5 wood-frame walk-up buildings with surface and tuck-under parking. Casa Puleta has a unit mix of 11 two-bedroom units, 26 three-bedroom units, 16 four-bedroom units, and 1 three-bedroom manager's unit. The property was constructed in 2002 and requires rehabilitation to address both immediate and long-term capital needs. The scope of the proposed rehabilitation includes comprehensive improvements to unit interiors. Unit interiors will be fitted with new countertops, Energy Star appliances, cabinets, flooring, air conditioning units, and water heaters. The developer also intends to renovate the existing on-site clubhouse and install solar panels throughout the property. The developer of the project will be Willow Partners. Willow Partners is an affordable housing developer based in Westlake Village. Since 1997, Willow Partners has developed 16 properties comprised of over 1,100 affordable units for families and seniors across California. During the 15-year tax credit compliance period, the project will be owned by a limited partnership comprised of Willow Partners acting as the administrative general partner, an affiliate of the American Opportunity Foundation acting as the managing general partner, and a to-be-selected investor limited partner. The total development cost of this project will be approximately $10.4 million, which translates to approximately $194,000 per unit. And the project will be financed with a combination of 4% tax credits, tax-exempt multifamily housing revenue bonds, income from operations, general partner equity, as well as a deferred developer fee of about $625,000. The developer is requesting the issuance of bonds in the amount of up to $6.25 million, and there are no Housing Commission funds being proposed for this project. Under the proposed financing, restricted rents will range from 30% of area median income to 60% of area median income, as can be seen in Table 6 of the staff report for you. Approval of the bond inducement and TEFRA resolutions does not commit the Housing Authority to issue bonds. The bonds would not constitute a debt of the city. If bonds are ultimately issued for the project, the bonds will not financially obligate the city, the Housing Authority, or the Housing Commission, because security for the repayment of the bonds will be limited to specific private revenue sources of the project. The requested actions before you are only preliminary steps to issue bonds, and the project will be brought forward once again for final approval in February of 2017 prior to close of bond financing. And that concludes our presentation, and we have a representative here from Willow Partners to answer any questions you may have as well. Thank you.
Commissioner Tassel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The project was built in 2002, according to your testimony. Is that right?
That's correct.
Does it strike you a bit unusual that 14 years later that we're having to make this kind of investment in this property?
I haven't personally been at the property and can't tell you about the condition of the property, but can say that this is typical for the affordable housing industry. Once projects end their tax credit compliance period, which is at the end of year 15, they typically reposition the assets with a comprehensive rehab.
Has anybody visited the property?
At the Housing Commission? Not to my knowledge, no.
So we don't have an idea what condition it's in right now?
No, but we have a representative here from the developer that can talk about that if you'd like.
Yeah, I'd like to hear.
Hello, commissioners. My name is David Slackard. I'm one of the managing partners at Willow Partners, the developer for the property. And you're, of course, welcome to visit at any time. We've had numerous inspections from TCAC, from Freddie Mac, who is we're working with on financing for the property. It's across the street from the Mayberry Apartments that you mentioned earlier. We had a community housing works rehabilitated. It's 54 units. It's got a couple hundred children running around and doing what children do. It does need rehabilitation. We were approached by our limited partner to basically buy them out of the property or sell the property, and that's what triggered this refinance. We saw it as a great opportunity to remodel the property and improve the services that are available, and that's why we're before you today.
Do you have any other developments here in San Diego?
Not in the city of San Diego. We do have an 80-unit property in National City.
Whereabouts?
It's on Plaza Boulevard.
East or west of 805?
Just to the west of 805. It was formerly a motel that was run down. We worked with the city to acquire it and replace that existing motel with 80 units of senior housing. It's a four-story property. Very pleased to be here in your community. Like to do more. It's challenging to find sites and make the numbers work financially, but we're very excited about the Casa Polita property.
Mr. Gentry?
I would like to point out to the board that this type of process is typical for the industry in repositioning and preserving an existing affordable housing property. This property will have been through its initial 15-year compliance time period, at which time the old program goes away. And by re-syndicating the equity in this property, it's a way to infuse some capital to do some upgrades that they won't have another opportunity to do for another 15 years. So part of this is a typical approach. Part of the approach is not just to repair what's there now, to take a look at the property's operation going forward 15 to, say, 17 years, assuming another 15-year compliance time period, and then another year or two repositioning thereafter to make sure it's in good operation during that time. There likely won't be another chance to infuse capital in this property during that time period.
That's correct.
Since it was constructed in 2002, I'm going to presume that there are dual-pane windows on all of those units at this time?
Yes, there are.
Okay, and so we're not replacing windows per se?
No, not replacing windows.
Okay. But they did mention replacing water heaters. Are water heaters in each individual unit, or are they? Is there a central water heater?
Each individual unit. And we're also going to put solar panels on the roof to reduce our electricity costs, Energy Star appliances. Basically just replace those aspects of the property that have really been worn down over time. As I say, it is a family property. It gets a lot of use. It's certainly would be an improvement, not just to the property, but the whole neighborhood if we could do this rehabilitation.
And the solar is going to be purchased, not leased?
Purchased.
Okay. And approximately what percentage of your overall energy needs are going to be taken care of by the solar?
For the electricity, 100%.
Really?
Yeah. So we're excited about that because that'll reduce our electric costs, but also our water bills have gone up pretty significantly with 4 increases in water bills over the last 2 years. So we're hoping to kind of level out our utility expenses.
Are you changing to a zeroscape landscaping?
We have already converted to a drip system landscape. It's helped somewhat, but we still, have a significant water bill, which is, I'm sure, not unusual for this area or for most of the state. So we're working to try to be, on budget as best we can.
There's a community room, am I correct? You mentioned a community room. How large is that?
1,500 square feet approximately.
Okay. We care very much about the reading achievement levels of the children who live in the projects that we support in one way or the other. Do you have any programs anticipated to provide some educational opportunities, whether it's computers and have kids able to check into the computers, monitored to make sure that they're checking into the right material, but anything of that nature?
Yes, we do have a computer room that was built at the time the project was constructed. We also have activities for the kids and after-school program that our activities director monitors 5 days a week.
Okay, and will any of that include reading achievement?
It's an after-school program where they work on their school homework. I'm assuming there's reading involved in those homework activities. We do holiday events. We do film nights on weekends. It's a good activities program that I think we have and I think has been a real benefit to the residents and their children.
In terms of security for the property, what are your intentions?
It's a fully gated property. We did have on-site security temporarily when there were instances where we felt it was appropriate. We do not have that currently. We do have some video monitors that we use. That's really the extent of the security, and we're pleased to report that we have not had any incidents, that would warrant on-site security, at least nothing in recently in the last few years.
I don't have any other questions. Commissioner Spoon?
I just wanted to confirm regarding the rents. The rents that they're requesting right now are the rents that are currently in effect, so there will be no change to the residents?
That is correct.
Can I ask one more question? With the remodel, are you moving families out and then back in, or how are you handling it?
That's a good question. We are going to give renters or residents a voucher. We do need about 2 to 3 days per unit of access to the units because we are replacing flooring also. Our experience has been that vinyl flooring is a lot more sturdy, is less problems than the carpeting that we have and predominantly used in the building now. So we're a little smarter. That's the one change and one of the remodel changes we're making. They have they'll have the option of going to a friend's house or neighbor's house or a motel, whatever they would like, and that's something that we'll pay for. But it's going to be about a 2-3 day process where they're going to need to vacate their units. That's what we're projecting. We're projecting a remodel schedule time frame of about 4 months. Yeah, so we're, you know, like I said, we're excited about it.
Commissioner Spoon has moved approval of the proposal. Commissioner Davis has seconded that motion. Is there any additional discussion? Seeing no indication of such, I'll call the question. All in favor of the proposal, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is carried unanimously. We'll look forward to seeing it when it's completed. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is 107. And Mr. Gentry, did you want to introduce that?
Mr. Davis is going to.
Okay.
Good morning, Commissioners. Jeff Davis, Chief of Staff. If you'd have a seat, please. It's my privilege to introduce to you Dr. Lynn Reeser and Senior Research Associate Thomas Hale. They will be presenting to you this morning on an economic impact study on the San Diego Housing Commission for the fiscal years from 2008 through 2014. The report is entitled SDHC's Growing Economic and Community Impact on San Diego. Dr. Lynn Reeser is a well-known and highly regarded economics expert. She is currently the chief economist for the Fermanian Business and Economic Institute at Point Loma Nazarene University. The Institute engages in economic analysis, modeling, and forecasting with practical and actionable recommendations for corporations, nonprofit organizations, and government agencies. Dr. Reeser has deep experience in the financial service sector, including 10 years as chief economist of the Investment Strategies Group at Bank of America, and currently she serves as chief economist of the Council of Economic Advisors for California State Treasurer John Chang. Thomas Hale is the Senior Research Associate for the Fermanian Business and Economic Institute. He supports the Institute through primary research, data collection, and modeling. Prior to joining FBEI, Mr. Hale worked for 20 years in the healthcare financial software industry, including the past 5 years researching and analyzing the impact of Medicare regulatory updates on health system revenue forecasting. We sincerely appreciate Dr. Reeser and Mr. Hale being here to present their findings, and with that, I will turn it over to Dr. Reeser.
Mr. Gentry, Commissioners, thank you for the opportunity to present to you this morning the results of our latest study. A year ago, we came before you and presented basically a snapshot of the economic contribution of the SDHC. In this study, we looked at a whole extended period of time during the past 8 years to understand the changing role of the SDHC and its overall economic role. Let me this morning just look at the highlights of our study in terms of its primary purpose, the footprint of the SDHC, its economic impact, the features that have contributed to that economic impact, and then some comments on the path forward. In terms of the overall purpose, there have been few, if any, studies, I believe, that have been done actually on the economic impact of a government agency. Typically, when you think of a government entity, you're just talking about the expense. But the question that we explored, can an economic value also be generated by a government institute? We also looked at the question of observing a government entity, whereas typically it's thought it's inherently bureaucratic. And the question is, can you infuse elements of innovation, entrepreneurship that are typically found in the private sector? Can you bring those parts of a culture and integrate them in a government institute? And then finally, can an institute really have much of an impact on what are indisputably the two major issues facing San Diego today? One, the lack of affordable housing, and two, the growing number of homelessness. So we then looked at the overall growth of the SDHC during the period 2008, when we, as you recall, were in a very depth of the recession through 2015, the economic value in terms of trying to measure the return on investment, some of these particular areas, and then the challenges, and some of the recommendations that we glean from this analysis. So first of all, I think the takeaway message, which, again, we follow the numbers in our study, so our clients never really give us any guidance. We follow the numbers. Some of the results are sometimes positive, sometimes they're negative, sometimes they're neutral. But this particular overall impact was actually very compelling and very interesting. What we found is that over the past 8 years, we're actually the total budgetary expense of the SDHC grew relatively modestly, about 7% over 8 years. The economic impact has just truly exploded. You've seen the impact on the city's gross regional product, or GRP, expand by about 55%, and a similar increase of over 50% on the county. So let me go through some of the details that lie behind that really very compelling finding. In terms of the footprint, today we see that the SDHC reaches about 89,000 individuals, and we measure this through four primary channels. First are the some 40,000 individuals that receive the typical results of a housing commission throughout the country, and that is the Section 8 vouchers. About 48,000 individuals benefit from that program. We also have a large number, over 40,000, that are benefiting from loans and grants. These loans and grants, of course, finance everything from the person who's just getting his first home mortgage to some of the projects that you've seen talked about this morning that helped construct or renovate affordable housing. We also have some 9,000 individuals that are living in units that are either owned or managed by the SDHC, and then about 4,300 individuals who are benefiting from the various homeless programs that the SDHC supports. In addition, I would comment that other programs such as gone through the Achievement Academy, counseling, education, job training, et cetera, those programs benefit many individuals in all of these four channels, and some of these individuals benefit from more than one program. Here you can see the growth of that footprint over the past 8 years. About 74,000 individuals were funneled through these various programs in 2008, and that number, as I said, has now grown significantly to about 89,000. Another example of some of the growth of the SDHC's footprint over this period of time, here you can see the number of units that are either managed or owned by the SDHC now numbers over 3,000. It's growing just as we speak, and you can see that number has increased very significantly by about 1,000 in just that 8-year time span. The loan portfolio also is increased significantly, jumping by about 50% in terms of dollar value over the past 8 years. Now, in terms of the economic impact, I would start by looking at the overall channels that we see the SDHC budget spending going out in the economy in different ways, the affordable housing, loans, grants, the property repairs, improvements, building, et cetera, that funnels that overall amount of overall spending, that $228 million of last year. Here you can see the growth in different segments. You have a full report. You can, you know, peruse these numbers, but you can see that bottom line going from $211 million to $228 million over the past 8 years. Again, a relatively modest 7% gain. Now let's look at some of the economic impacts. The first I might mention is the rent savings that people who live in units that have been financed through grants or loans accommodated by the SDHC. You have now about 14,000 households receiving rent savings that average about $520 a month. And so that is obviously a very important number for not only those individuals, but it helps them accommodate spending to fuel the rest of economic activity in the region. And here you can see the bottom line in terms of jobs. We have not only the direct effect as people are employed either by the SDHC or builders or developers or other people along the supply chain. But the overall ripple effects, you find that about today, about 2,900 jobs are created directly or indirectly in the city of San Diego. If you take it countywide, there's about 3,200 jobs that are created. So despite the relatively small budget impact, you do have actually a significant impact on overall economic and job activity. And you can see the other numbers in the growth in this table. Here particularly you can see the very significant increase in the impact on gross regional product, moving from about $160 million in the city in 2008 to today about $250 million, and in the county also seeing a very significant growth in that terms of overall economic impact. What are the major elements that have allowed this significant economic growth and contribution to take place? We actually think there are really three dominant effects. First is the bringing of entrepreneurial, very different culture from the private sector into a government entity. And you see this very rarely in terms of all the government organizations that I've been involved in. You rarely see that culture. And as you know, it's very hard to blend those cultures, but it's certainly been done effectively at the SDHC. Public-private partnerships have been used very effectively here at the SDHC. And as a result, you've had innovative solutions, things that have not been able to be done elsewhere. For instance, some of the projects that you just looked at, Churchill, et cetera, you see that there have been unique financing packages that have been developed. You see public-private partnerships. And then on a separate note, some of the things that the Achievement Academy have done have been very striking and significant. So a lot of innovative solutions that were really not seen in the typical housing authority. In terms of conclusions, the challenges of the SDHC are definitely striking. Basically, this organization is charged with two of the most pressing and difficult problems faced in this region. One, the supply of affordable housing, and two, dealing with the homeless issues. And you have at this point an inherently high cost of land, which is pushing the cost of housing, plus all the presses of demand, and a huge growing demand for housing. Look at the list of 68,000 people on the waiting list for Section 8 housing. So these are the challenges. In terms of the path forward, a few things here on our wish and recommendation list. First, the SDHC, along with other players in the building industry, are now working with regulators to see if we can streamline the regulatory process. As you all know, the SDHC came out with its report of 60 recommendations last year of how to improve the process. Those numbers were culled down to 11 elements, and I would encourage further work with our regulatory partners to, along with other players, private builders, Habitat, Humanity, and we see elements, actions by the city council. I asked the mayor, I'm encouraged to see things being done to try to reduce the process, the time involved, and also some of the various fees. Second, the focus needs to be, we just need to increase the supply of housing. We're just not keeping up with the demand in housing, especially in the low and moderate income elements. Third, we need to understand the most effective wraparound package for homeless services. The work we've done on Project 25, the vulnerability study, indicates that the permanent supportive housing model can work, it can be effective, although one, we need to be able to study these people that are part of this program for longer periods of time so we know what works and does not work, particularly in terms of the wraparound package of supportive health care and social services. And again, different segments of the homeless may need different pieces of that wraparound package. And finally, we need to determine the most effective and the various channels of finance that can be available to deal with all these issues. We know that the federal government funds are going to be limited in the period ahead. We know this is going to be an issue, and so I think we need to look at other sources of financing, other beneficiaries of the things the SDHC does. For instance, one, hospitals and other providers of public services could benefit to the extent that the demand from the homeless is less on them. Second, a lot of private companies could benefit to the extent that we have more affordable housing produced in this area. Other funders and grants also looking for ways, innovative ways, that these problems of homelessness and affordable housing can be solved. In summary, this was an intriguing study for us to work on. It was a very involved and intricate one. We worked closely with all the players in this to actually bring up the data for the last 8 years and track it. But I think our bottom line is that the SDHC is not just another government agency. So thank you. Let me answer any questions.
Yes. Mr. Gentry, you had a comment first.
Make just a couple of comments as well. And Lynn, thank you very much for being here with us this morning. I got to know Lynn Reeser about a year and a half ago, and she produced a report for other organizations that talked about the governmental burden on the cost of producing affordable housing. And it occurred to me once I got to know her and learned of her reputation that it would be nice to have an independent eye with no bias taking a look at what we do and answering what to me is a very essential question, and that is beyond the charity impact of what we do, which is hugely important. I don't want to belittle that at all. Beyond what we do to help certain individuals and families, what is our impact on the community at large? Are we a burden in order to help these people? Does it provide a larger help to the larger economy? And so Lynn and her folks did a preliminary toe-in-the-water kind of thing a year ago to take a look at our impact in 1 year. And then I chose the 2008 time period to now basically because that was the time I came here and have some responsibility for. And that was also the time that this board and the city council charged staff with basically redefining ourselves and doing things in a new way. So I thought that made some elegant sense. And so I would commend this study to you. I will also say to the board that the staff had no input into this other than providing data, or Lynn would have beaten me up. I would encourage you all to engage in a full conversation with Lynn this morning. And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Tassa.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Reeser, and I appreciate you and Mr. Hale being here today and sharing this study with us. I think it reinforces much of what this board believes this organization is doing. It's great to have a third party separately to take a look and do an objective analysis and share your thoughts with us. I especially appreciate you including the challenges that we face because it's not we certainly can't. While we're proud of with the progress this organization, the innovation that this organization embraces, we understand, too, that we have challenges ahead. And so I appreciate you not leaving that out of your conclusions and addressing that. Most notably is the issue of the cost of affordable housing. And I believe that previously in your previous work identified the causes for some of those, the costs going up as high as they have, and that's something that some of us that have sit up here are very focused in on. Some of us have experienced building housing before, and for us to be able to face the kind of the cost that we incur is troubling to us, and I think that was reinforced in a previous study that you had done before. These issues are important issues, and they're huge challenges. The issue not only of the cost of affordable housing, but the issue of addressing the homelessness. These are huge societal problems that not any one organization can resolve on its own. We welcome, this commissioner welcomes, any kind of input that you may have on potential solutions. This is a huge issue that we all have to address, and it's something that I personally am striving to try to get my arms around. Not easy issues to address, and I just wondered if you may have any reactions to that.
I certainly agree, and why I noted, you know, this is a mammoth task, and basically the SDHC is at the epicenter and is charged with these two important issues, the supply of affordable housing and homelessness. It's definitely, however, I think, showing the leadership in this area. We will need to work with other partners, as you said. On the affordable housing side, anything we can do to mitigate the rise in cost, the study that we did just shows on average in the county about 40% of the average of the cost of a new unit, either for rental or for home ownership, is due to regulation. A lot of the part is because of the time delays, 10 years or so, to be in the entitlement area. So that is an area where if we could just move the needle a little bit, that would be significant. In the homeless area, I think, again, we need to work effectively with these other partners, particularly perhaps in segmenting the people in the homeless community, the people who are at one end have extreme areas of issues with either intoxication or drug dependence, alcohol dependence, or mental health, as opposed to others who perhaps just don't know how to be able to survive in this economy. So I think we will need to try to segment those units, those types of people, to understand what programs may be effective for one versus the other.
Mr. Gentry? Commissioner Spoon?
I'd like to tell you how fascinating I think the whole your whole process in this study has been. I so appreciate listening to the methodology. I'm going to read it in detail, so thank you very much. It's motivating, I believe, for all of us, for the board, and for the people that work here. Everybody is mission-driven. You know, our hearts are in it. And to see this from my perspective, to see that there actually is an economic impact to it is very, very motivating for us. And I hope that we're able to disseminate your information to the public at large.
Certainly.
Hopefully to the watchdog in the newspaper. but thank you. Thank you very much for your work, both of you.
There are a couple of observations you made that I appreciate, in the sense of you identified the entrepreneurial nature of the organization, and that's a significant departure from housing agencies across the country. That's something that all of us have been involved in helping to create that atmosphere, but the staff, many of whom are out there in the audience at this time, get the kudos for adopting that philosophy and understanding that they're not like the other housing agencies, and that they have a bigger mission. It's actually, they got the same mission, but they have an obligation to find new and exciting ways, hopefully, to address the problem. I also appreciate you pointing out the fact that the Learning Academy is playing a role in this too, because that's not something that's present across the country. We're not unique in the sense that we're not the only one who have something like this, but we've got a good one. And the idea, again, is recognizing that part of the overall solution, whether it's homelessness or the need for low-income rentals, is involved in the process of becoming better able to achieve meaningful and productive employment. And I think that's what our Learning Academy is, our Achievement Academy is charged with. So I appreciate both of those observations on that. And, you got great comments here, because this lady is truly a numbers lady. And when she tells you she appreciates that, she does. And when she tells you she's going to study this in detail, guarantee she will on that. So thank you again on that. Now, Mr. Gentry, you have a couple of comments? Oops. You don't get to talk yet.
You know, okay. I have one more comment. You were talking about segmenting the homeless population. And reflecting back on the young woman that spoke this morning, I mean, there are such differences in the homeless population. I mean, we can just see her, at the time she is forced to move, she has no other options unless we can come up with something for her. She'll be one of the homeless, which is far different than what we see on 16th Street, or under the freeway overpass. So there are such different solutions for every segment. So I think that's a very profound comment that you made. I think we need to do more with that. Thank you.
Mr. Gentry.
Just a couple of comments. One is when we engaged Dr. Reeser in the study, we knew that our hearts were right. We wanted to make sure our heads were right in this approach, too, and to make sure that it would pass muster even for the forensic auditor who's on our board and who it would make sense. And an overriding philosophy of this organization for the past 8 years, both board and staff, is that we are not just providing money to help people, although that's an important part of what we do and a critical part of what we do, but also that we are an important part of the larger economy in San Diego, and that what we do has a large beneficial impact beyond the people we serve, and it serves the entire community. We thought we believed that, but we wanted an independent eye just to confirm, and we're very, very pleased of, Lynn, what you've been able to do here. We're very proud of what we've done and thankful for your fine work in studying and deciphering it and displaying it. I'll also point out to the board that it's my intent that this document not just go now sit on the shelf. I want to figure out how to use this to communicate to our broader publics, to the city council, to the media if they pay attention to positive news, to our funding bodies and our governors on how we do our business, and perhaps not just to get recognition for ourselves, but to be a model for emulation elsewhere. Lynn, thank you.
Thank you again.
Great, thank you.
Okay, at this time, we're going to adjourn the public session of this meeting and go into closed session. And our counselor has something to say about that.
If I could, we don't need today. I had agendized this lawsuit, but it has been resolved by virtue of a judgment being entered in favor of the San Diego Housing Commission in its totality. We have been dismissed from the lawsuit, and we are seeking attorney's fees based on that success. So there's no reason to discuss this in closed session.
Motion to adjourn? Second? It's been moved and seconded that this meeting is hereby adjourned. Thank you, everyone.